Okay, so I want to talk tonight a little bit about, as you see, I called it pregnancy and childbirth. I originally was going to, I mentioned in the email, I think I said childbirth and baby naming, but I think I bit off a little bit more than I could chew. So there's a lot of stuff here, a lot of interesting halachos and minhagim. So I think we'll have to wait for the baby naming until next week. But this week we'll talk about some interesting pregnancy topics, and then some interesting childbirth topics. So first of all, when it comes to pregnancy, it's very interesting that when you if you take an informal poll of people and how they how they relate to their pregnancy, how they publicize their pregnancy. So you have, on one extreme, you have people that as soon as they get a positive test, it's on Facebook, it's on all the WhatsApp groups. You can even have a picture of the positive, and they're spreading it everywhere, far and wide. Especially in today's day and age, with communication the way it is, people spread these things very, very quickly. And then you have other people that literally will keep it a secret as long as possible. Obviously, at a certain point, it's impossible to keep it a secret any longer. But, they keep it a secret as long as possible and keep it a guessing game. Maybe they'll tell the close relatives and things like that. But otherwise, not. And there's no clear halacha about, this issue as to when to tell people, whether to tell people. There's no clear halacha. It's really just minhagim. It's really different minhagim and different families. Different people have different minhagim, different comfort levels. Poskim do talk about it, and there are some recommendations, but I wouldn't call it the level of halacha that it's asar or mutter. It's recommendations that that people have. Some people are not excited to tell for the following reason, because the Gemara tells us in Tainus on Daf Ches, which is source number one, V'yomer Rabbi Yitzchak, Ein habracha mitzuya el bedavar hasamui min ha'ayin. Right, the Gemara tells us that that bracha is really found in something that's hidden. When things are hidden, when things are quiet, that's when you have bracha. When things are loud and things are in people's faces, then you don't have bracha so much. There's not as much bracha. What's the idea behind it? He quotes a pasuk, "Shenemar yitzav Hashem itcha es habracha ba'asa mecha." It's the language of ba'asa mecha samui. It's quiet. It's hidden. And similarly, and this is, I think, related. If you look at the next statement, Tana de Rabbi Yishmael, "Ein habracha metzuya lebedavar she'ein ha'ayin sholetes bo." Like the bracha only is found in something where there's no ayin hara. Now ayin hara, we once spoke about ayin hara here, but ayin hara, there is, there are some that understand it in a metaphysical way, that it's some sort of evil force and things like that. There are those who explain it that way. There are some who explain it. It's simple jealousy. That if you have something and you flaunt it or you show it off or you tell people, and there are people that don't have that and they feel jealous about it. That jealousy can create some sort of din against you, in Shamayim. And, you're making people feel badly. You're making people jealous. So that's one way of understanding Ayin Hara. And there are those who believe that that for Ayin Hara purposes, this is not something that we should talk about. Obviously, when it's obvious and the woman is showing and people know about it, so you have no choice. It's clear to everyone. But to talk about it and to publicize it and to put it on Facebook and everything like that, is not the proper thing to do, not the appropriate thing to do. That's what some do maintain, and also the medically speaking, there's a higher likelihood of miscarriage in the first trimester, in the first 3 months. So because of that, some people also specifically for the first 3 months like to keep it quiet. Usually, the first 3 months the woman's not showing anyway, so it's easy to keep it quiet. And plus, with the higher risk of miscarriage. Plus, she's not showing, so just we'll keep it quiet. We won't say anything. We don't want an ayin hara. And then, after 3 months, so then you can tell your parents, you could tell close relatives, and then obviously, the cat's out of the bag, so to speak, at some point. But it's an interesting thing. You'll notice different minhagim if you look around. But really, one of the issues is this issue of ayin hara. There are some that claim there's also a tsnius issue, a tsnius component. And again, tsnius, not that there's anything wrong, obviously, with a woman being pregnant, but just tsnius in the fact that these are private things you try to keep private as long as possible. Again, when it's public, and everybody's going to see. But otherwise, you keep things private. There's an interesting Gemara in Bava Metzia on Daf Chaf Gimel, which is source number two, and the Gemara says that there are three things that that rabbis, right, Rabbanan, lie about. Okay, don't worry. Don't get nervous. The Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Bahane Tlas Milei Avide Rabbanan De Mishanu B'Milayu. There are three things that rabbis tend to lie about. Number one, B'maseches. Maseches means how much they've learned. You know, the person doesn't want to show off. You don't want to say, you know, oh yeah, I finished Shas yesterday. You know, you want to keep it quiet. So people will lie about that. Bipuria and Ushpiza. So we'll skip Puria for a minute. Ushpiza, it's interesting. Some of Farshim understand this to mean a good host. So why sometimes rabbis lie about a good host? Why? Because if a rabbi comes and says, you know, oh, I ate at this person's house, or I stayed at this person's house, and they were just an unbelievable host, what's going to happen? Everybody's going to flock to that house, you know, so the person will be overwhelmed by all the demands and all the requests. So that's why a rabbi can say, you know, it was good, you know, it was fine, you know, it was fine, not to make a big deal out of it. What's Puria? So Puria means a bed in Aramaic. So Rashi explains what's Puria. Rashi in source number 3, Shimashta mitascha yomar lav midas tzniyosu. So if someone asks the rabbi a personal question about his intimate life, the rabbi can lie because it's inappropriate. It's tzniyus, they keep it quiet. Now, you might say anybody can lie because not only the rabbi, but it's not an appropriate question. Tosfos doesn't like this under this pshat of Rashi because he says, who's asking those kind of questions? So Tosfos understands also it has to do with tzniyus, but it has a little bit of a different interpretation. But the bottom line here, whether you understand it like Rashi or like Tosfos, the bottom line is that when it comes to matters of tzniyus, you're allowed to bend the truth. You're allowed to hide things a little bit. You know, when it comes to tznius, you don't have to, you know, be 100% honest because there's you know, we believe as Jews, we're supposed to keep things quiet. Not everything is supposed to be broadcasted to the entire world. Okay. So that's in terms of revealing to others, you know, when a person is pregnant. There's another interesting discussion about you know, should a person, and again, this does not rise to the level of Isser Veheter, certainly not. But should a person, is it recommended for a person to find out the gender of the child that they're having? Right? Is it recommended? And it's interesting because, you know, I grew up always, you know, you don't find out. You don't find out. You know, you don't find out. It's a surprise and that's it. You know, when I got married, it's up to my wife. You know, whatever she wants to do, that's what, you know, that's what we do. But it's interesting because we once actually had a sonographer who was doing the sonogram. And she told us, and she was a frum girl who was, you know, she was a frum girl, and she told us that I think she was from Eretz Yisrael, and she said, in Eretz Yisrael, everybody finds out. It's no such thing as, you know, yeah, everybody finds out in Eretz Yisrael. In America, yeah, people don't like to, and this and that. In Eretz Yisrael, everybody finds out. And it's interesting, you know, it's another one of these things that that there are poskim who talk about, again, more at the level of recommendation, what's recommended and what's not, as opposed to what's usher and what's mutter. But some also recommend that this, you know, based on the same Gemara in source number 1, that the bracha is mitsuya and something that samui min ha'ayin. You know, that we don't find out, you know, we don't find out, hopefully that'll be a bracha, you don't find out, and whatever it is. You know, others say, well, you know, listen, either it's one or the other. You know, it's one or the other. You know, it's not like we're talking about, you know, we spoke about last week, you know, some of the health-related issues and things like that. That's a different story. But here, you know, the gender, it's one thing or the other. So many, you know, many say it's not really a big deal either way. And it's a personal choice if they, you know, if they want to be surprised or not. But again, you'll find different sensitivities. When a woman's pregnant, there's a custom that a woman does not go to a cemetery. A woman doesn't go to a cemetery. It's interesting. My wife and I had a lot of we had some issues with this when my wife was expecting Yisrael Meir, our oldest. So it was you know, we were both teaching and we had off. You know, we both had off. I wasn't teaching; I was learning. She was teaching. We had off like right before Pesach, like a week before Pesach. So we decided, you know, we're expecting our first child. When's the next time we're going to get to Eretz Yisrael? And you know, we haven't been there since. When's the next time we're going to go get to Eretz Yisrael? So let's run now. We'll go a week before Pesach. We came back actually. You know, we were going the wrong direction. Everybody's coming to America. You know, we were, you know, and then everybody's going to Israel. We were coming back to America. So we will go just for a week before Pesach. We'll spend some time there. And we went to Eretz Yisrael. And of course, you go to Eretz Yisrael, and you know, you want to visit the Kivrei Tzadikim. You know, you come to cemeteries. We went on a couple of tours, and inevitably, and my wife was you know, 7 months pregnant at the time. She was visibly showing, and inevitably, any time we stepped foot into a cemetery, somebody would come over. Usually, a nice, you know, elderly Israeli woman come over, you know, and say, you know, pregnant women really shouldn't be coming into cemeteries. Inevitably, and we had spoken to someone in advance, and we got a special dispensation to go into cemeteries. But there is this minhag not to go into cemeteries. So the question was asked to the Minchas Yitzchak about this minhag. And the one who asked the question said that, you know, I can't really find a source for this minhag. You know, it's a minhag, you know, everybody knows about this. You know, women don't go into cemeteries. You know, pregnant women don't go into cemeteries. What's the source for this minhag? So he writes himself, Source number 4. Asher Nashim Tzidkanios. Right? The holy righteous women. They say, right? The custom is that they don't go into a Beis HaChaim, they don't go into a cemetery during pregnancy. He writes, the Minchas Yitzchak. Right? He says, I have no idea what I don't know of a source for this minhag. So it's interesting. He writes, Aval Dailanu, Mashakosav Rashba, Huva Bechuva Heshiv Moshe. He says, but it's enough, you know, what the Rashba writes. Listen to this. You know, we know the term Baba Maisa, right? What's a Baba Maisa? You know, old wives' tale, right? The old wives' tale. So writes it's quoted in the name of the Rashba, the Ein Lidchos HaKabbalah Sheyesh B'Yad Nashim HaZekenos Mibnei Amenu. He says, we believe in Baba Maisas. We believe in Baba Maisas. You know, if you have the Baba saying something, the older Jewish women have a Kabbalah, they have a Mesorah, they have a Minhag, you don't mess. You don't mess with the Babas. You know, you don't mess with the grandmothers. And that's, so he says that, you know, you can't mess around. You know, Nashim Tzidkanios. He writes that it's interesting at the very end. So he writes that perhaps he suggests perhaps an idea behind this source is that he quotes a Mishnah in Maseches Parah that when it came to preparing the ashes for the Parah Aduma, so they were very careful to make sure that everything was maintained b'tahara. Everything was 100% pure. They didn't want, you know, God forbid, they didn't want it to get impure. The whole purpose of the Parah Aduma was to purify those who were impure. So the Mishnayos talk about the fact that they would actually have pregnant women, and they would put them in a special, you know, hotel, you know, with their husbands or whatever. They put up the family, and they would let this woman stay there during her pregnancy, give birth there, and this child was basically, they knew, it's verifiable that this child was born b'kedusha v'tahara, never coming into contact with any tumah. And when the child would grow up, they would allow this child to go fill up the water, the special water that was going to be used for the Parah Aduma, and you know, many, many safeguards were put into place to ensure that nothing, no tumah would come into contact, and this is what was done. So they actually, you know, had this practice in the times of the Beis HaMikdash. So the Minchas Yitzchak suggests, an interesting suggestion, you know, down after the last three dots there in the middle of the paragraph, Ubevadai rov binos Yisrael hayurotzos lizkos es b'nein b'mitzvah rabazu. Tremendous mitzvah for your son, for your child, to be able to go fill up the water for the Parah Aduma. What a mitzvah. So every pregnant woman wants their child to be able to be zoch in this mitzvah. Pregnant women were very careful when the Beis HaMikdash was around, because they didn't want their children to become tameh. They didn't want to encounter any tumah, so that their children would be fit for this tremendous mitzvah. I believe, perhaps this is the source of the practice. The righteous Jewish women are living with the hope, the daily hope, that the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt. And every pregnant woman is waiting. Maybe the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt tomorrow, and my child is going to be the one to fill up the Me'ah Shiloach for the Efer of the Parah Aduma. V'shomeres atzman mitumah k'chol ha'efshar v'imkein efshar lomer demikana makor l'minuk shal anoshim me'ubaros sh'nizhar shal olelech ha'beis ha'chayim. So that's what he suggests. A fascinating suggestion, I thought. But that's what he suggests. You know, shows you the tzidkus, the righteousness of the Jewish women. Now, granted, there are, because this is a minhag, and because there is no clear source for this minhag, so there are many heterim, like in that instance when we were in Eretz Yisrael for 1 week. So we asked, and the person said, you know, you're in Eretz Yisrael for a limited period of time. You know, one of the places we wanted to go was to visit, you know, Tova's grandparents. So they're buried in Eretz Yisrael. We're not going to get there, right? You know, we don't go every couple weeks. So they said, under those circumstances, you know, you can go. And then there are heterim that people will give, you know, Kivrei Tzadikim, it's okay to go to, and things like that. But inevitably, I'm telling you, if you ever walk in there with a pregnant woman, just beware. You're going to be accosted by some, you know, well-meaning Israeli woman trying to redirect you to a different location. But that's, yeah.
Question. For those pregnant women who don't visit cemeteries, would they attend funerals?
Good question. The answer is probably not. And again, under those circumstances also, there might be exceptions. when my wife was expecting, there was also a friend of hers tragically lost her husband, a young guy, passed away. And we asked the Rosh Hashiva at the time, you know, can she go to the Levaya? And he said yes. He said because the girl will get chizuk if she sees her friends there and they're coming to give her chizuk. So it's, so yes. Again, it's only a minhag and it's not clear what the source is. So all things being equal, it's a nice thing, you know, it's a nice minhag to have to avoid. But if there are circumstances or that warrant it, so then it would certainly be okay.
The times of the mission, at least women didn't nurse their kids. Because they were, depending on a boy or a girl, they were tamei.
You're saying they were tamei. No, but that kind of tum, I don't think we're more worried about like tamei meis. You know, I think that kind of tum, I don't think we're so concerned with. Yeah, of course they would have to nurse.
A woman, I'm saying that
the child doesn't contract that kind of tum anyway. It's not, whether it's yoledes or tumas nida, the woman, the child is not going to contract that. If it's tamei meis, there are ways that you can contract it. But the child wouldn't contract that, I don't think.
Why? If a Vita sits on, let's say, Truma or something.
Tumas Medrus. Yeah, but that's Medrus. But just holding a baby, I don't think makes for tummy. Right. But, yeah. No, but you're right. I mean, the woman has to nurse her child. Right. So, yeah. Okay. There's an interesting minhag that you might have seen, you might have heard about a woman who's expecting, especially as it gets closer to the due date, consuming some sort of esrog jelly. I don't know if you've ever heard of this. You've heard of this minhag. Okay, there is such a minhag. In fact, it's documented that Rebbetzin Kanievsky, Zichrono Livracho, passed away several years ago. She had this minhag, and she used to prepare every year, vials of esrog jelly, many, many vials of esrog jelly. And people would come to her, and she would hand them out, like as a segula for childbirth. What's the idea behind it? So the Tamei HaMinhagim actually mentions this minhag, and he writes, I mean, he doesn't talk about a vial of esrog jelly, but he talks in source number 5, he writes, Tam Sha'isha no sheches es ha-pitam shela esrog. He talks about a woman biting off the pitam of an esrog, hopefully after Sukkot, okay? Keep the pregnant women away from my esrog on Sukkot, but after Sukkot, why? Mibnei Sha'amu Zal, Eitz shechata bo'adam arishon esrog haya. Right, there's an opinion in the Medrash. We know that the Eitz Hadas was an esrog tree, right? Not a apple tree like everybody thinks. There's even an opinion that says it was wheat. There's many different opinions in the Midrashim, but there's one opinion that says it was an esrog tree. Al kein no shech es hapitom kedei laharos kishem she'ein li shum hana bezos haneshicha kach lo haya li oz shum hana. And it's almost a statement of like a tikkun of this of the chait of chava. We see this resurfacing, many times throughout Jewish practice when it comes to women. Very often, women have these minhagim that are trying to be masaki in the chait of chava. So just like I'm biting off the pitam and it doesn't taste all that good, and it's I don't get any hana from this So too, chava didn't get any hana either, and we're trying to be masakin that chit. Now again, I don't know how that translates into esrog jelly. Presumably, esrog jelly is a little tastier than just biting off the pitam. But there is some source probably related to this of a pregnant woman. By the way, also because of the curse of chava had a lot to do with a painful childbirth. Painful labor and delivery. So this was kind of a tikkun for that to ensure a nice smooth delivery. You may have also, yeah.
You recovered the sacrum, the esrog, would they do all the esrog?
So they have to have a business for it. So they found this. Tamei HaMinhagim. Yeah, that's right.
Doesn't take much.
Exactly. So you may have seen another minhag that sometimes men when their wife is in the ninth month have a minhag to do psicha.
Right.
You've seen this minhag. Okay, so some people, there's different, some people take it very seriously, and every single psicha, we just had, a friend of mine, his wife delivered a couple weeks before mine, and, he was totally monopolizing all of the psichas, for that ninth month, every single psicha he was doing. So this actually comes from the Chida. There is a source to it. The Chida writes, he doesn't explain it, but in source number 6, the Chida writes in a tshuva, he writes, "V'haminag if ishlo meuberas v'hi bechodesh hatashi konim psicha sahechal." He should buy psicha. Now again, he's talking about a shul where they would sell psicha, so you should buy psicha. But it's an Indian to do psicha. Again, the reasoning behind it seems to be that if you do psicha, for the aron, And you know, so hopefully the psicha of your child will be smooth without any complications. That seems to be the idea behind it. Again, there are those who take it very, very seriously, and every single psicha, you know, during the 9th month they make sure to do. You know, my personal posek, I remember when my wife was expecting our first, so I asked him, and he said, you know, you do it once. Do it once during the 9th month, you're mekayim the minhag. You know, you don't have to do it every single time. So that's what I do. You know, that's what I do. I try to do it once before, you know, during the 9th month. But some people do take it very, very seriously. The next interesting question is about inducing labor. Right? Is a person allowed to? And this is really where we get a little bit into Isser Beheter. Is a person allowed to induce labor? And this is, you know, especially nowadays with the proliferation of you know, all these drugs. And they give a little Pitocin, you know, a little Pitocin, get things moving. And very often you have doctors, and especially in today's day and age when things are so busy and so hectic, and it's much easier if I could just schedule, you know, instead of waiting and who knows when I'm going to go into the hospital. Just I'll schedule a time. You know, I'll come to the hospital. You know, it'll be nice and easy. We'll know when it's going to be. Especially, you want to make a bris. You know, you have to schedule a bris, and everything is nice and simple. So this way, we'll just induce. You know, we'll induce around the time. You know, we don't have to bump it up so early, but around that time, we'll induce. So Rav Moshe was asked this shaila, and he discusses it in the Tshuva and Yoredeya. Now it's interesting. Rav Moshe's the shaila that was posted to Rav Moshe was a little bit of a different case. This case was a woman who. Who the doctors were basically told her that she has to have a C-section, and then the question was, if she's having a C-section anyway, so then do they have to wait until she goes into labor and then do the C-section, or can they just schedule the C-section whenever they're going to do it? So Rav Moshe, and again, all these types of shilas, are very tricky because there's many different factors. And obviously, again, like we said last week, and Rav Moshe makes this very clear, anytime there's any danger, right, any sakana, then there's no question. There's no shila, right? But if there's a sakana, then you can do whatever you want. You know, you get the baby out, there's no questions, we're talking about where there's no sakana. Right? There's no sakana, it's just a matter of scheduling. You know, so you're allowed to schedule it in advance. So Rav Moshe is not a fan of inducing labor, bringing it about unnecessarily. And he writes in source number 7, "Aval koponim nira dekeven she'efshel lechakos ein lahakdim." Right, if she can wait, and again, there's no danger, she can wait. The doctor says it's fine. Then she shouldn't really do it. She shouldn't induce it early. Dehakoni tuachu gam bechshash sakana ve'ein lahakdim acholi uchshash hasakana. So he says, number one, anytime you have an operation, as quote unquote minor as it might be. And we all know stories of operations that were coined minor operations, complications and things happened, etc., etc. So Rav Moshe says a C-section also, it's routine, relatively minor, but it's something. It's an operation. It's there's an element of sakana here. Rav Moshe says we don't bump up sakanos. You know, when it's time and you have to deal with it, you deal with it. But we don't bring sakana situations early. Okay. If you skip to the next underline, he writes not only for the woman herself, but even for the vlad, for the developing child. V'gam lahavlad tov yoser lihios bebeten ha'em ad hazman shenikva bederech TV. He says, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what he's doing. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what he's doing. So it's better for the child to remain in utero until the body decides that it's time for the child to be delivered. Now, of course, if the doctors are telling you that it's getting dangerous, every doctor has their own sheet about this. You know, we know that 40 weeks is the average time when a woman delivers. Doctors will let them go till about 41. Some doctors, many doctors at 41 already will say, okay, enough is enough. And because already if the baby's in there too long, then things can happen. The baby, excretes and then, imbibes their own excretion. It's not a good thing. So therefore, very often at 41 weeks, the doctors will induce. Some doctors will wait till 42. I don't think any doctors today will let a woman go past 42 weeks. But again, assuming that there's no pressing issue to get the child out, Rav Moshe says it's better for the child to be there. V'nimtza shemarin lahal yelad shegam kein hu aser. Right? Just because your scheduling works out better, that's not. There's no heter to mess around with what's better for the child. If what's better for the child is to remain in utero until the natural time comes for the child to be delivered, then you have no right to reschedule because it works better with your gym schedule or whatever the case might be. And he says, you know, and sometimes, you know, he's talking about, again, that case of the C-section. He says sometimes doctors are wrong, and they think, you know, something can't happen, and then it really it can. But he writes, really, in this case, v'tzarech lechakos, ad shetargish chevle haleda v'yomru harofim she'yev shalechakos. Right? She should wait until she feels, until labor starts. And then the doctors say, okay, you can't wait anymore, you got to do it. So then you do it. Oh, so of course, if the doctors say there's a sakana, so then of course you do it. It's interesting because Rav Moshe writes that he's not aware of any natural means of inducing labor. I guess when this tshuva was written, you know, these weren't common. You know, he writes at the end that he heard maybe there are some things, you know, they can give some drugs and they can do it. So nowadays it's very, very common, and doctors will just, you know, they'll just schedule things. You know, we went to have a situation where the doctor was going on vacation. You know, so he offered. He said, you know, I'll just induce you right before I leave. You know, this way, you know, because you know, you don't want your doctor to be on vacation when you go into labor. So, you know, we didn't take him up on it, you know, but people, you know, people do these kind of things. So he writes also, then he writes a fascinating svar in the second paragraph there in source number 7. He writes a fascinating svar, and he writes that there's another reason to wait until naturally the baby comes out. What's that? So he writes that that childbirth, people think childbirth is a sakana. Right? People think it's a sakana. Says Rav Moshe, childbirth is not really a sakana at all. And he says, what's my proof? Because why would a Kadosh Baruch Hu create, you know, the process of reproduction in a way that's going to endanger the life of the woman? Not only that, but there's a mitzvah. So Hashem's not going to give you a mitzvah to procreate, a mitzvah to reproduce, and there's going to be a sakana to the woman involved. That doesn't make any sense. So he says it's not a sakana. Ah, but sometimes complications happen, we know. Women, unfortunately, have died in childbirth. Rav Moshe says that's not because of the etzem sakana. That must be because of some chait. Right? That must be because she was punished for some reason. This woman, we don't know why, and we can't, you know, explain why, or whatever the case might be. But that's the exception. The rule is that childbirth is not a sakana. So writes Rav Moshe, but that's only if you wait for the proper time. If you wait for the time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says it's time for this child to come into the world, that's when childbirth is not a sakana. But if you induce labor unnecessarily, right, when there's no pressing need to do so, if you induce labor, says Rav Moshe, that might be a sakana. Now you're already talking about an unnatural type of childbirth, an unscheduled childbirth, right, Rav Moshe, that might be sakana. So it's also you can't induce labor unnecessarily because you're getting into you might actually be putting the woman into a state of sakana. Fascinating svar. But you see, in the end, he's very much opposed to inducing labor, and that's what, you know, many people are opposed in general to inducing. And we try to again, obviously, if there's a pressing situation and it's necessary, so of course you do it. But otherwise, we try to hold off. Yeah.
Here in the U.S., they will let you go out and have some clothes for a woman in labor on Shabbos.
Okay.
And there it just has to be a guy.
Okay. Right. Okay. So we'll talk about this now a little bit. I'm not going to talk about Hatzalah too much, but we'll talk about this now. Okay. So when a woman is in labor, when a woman is in labor, so we know that that you're allowed to be mechalal Shabbos. To save a woman in labor, to get her to the hospital and allow her a safe delivery. The Shulchan Aruch writes in source number 8 that a yoledes, and this is the second side of the page, yoledes hi kecholo sheyesh bo sakana. A yoledes, a woman who's in labor, has the status of a cholo sheyesh bo sakana. Right? A dangerously ill person. A dangerously ill person, the halacha is, you're allowed to be mechal Shabbos with this person. Umechalin oleha Shabbos lechol mashu tzricha. Whatever she needs, you're allowed to be mechal Shabbos for a woman in labor. Korin lachacham and lachom lemakom. You're allowed to call whether it's a midwife or a doula or obviously the doctor. You're allowed to call them. Umiyaldin osa. You're allowed obviously to deliver her. Umadikin lanera filu hisuma. If she needs light and you know she needs a candle lit, you can light a candle for her if that's what's necessary. You could be mechal Shabbos. Whatever she needs, you're allowed to be mechal Shabbos for a yoledes. However, writes the Shulchan Aruch, since nowadays, I mean, it's not only nowadays, but even in the times of the Shulchan Aruch, childbirth was relatively safe. Right? There was an element of potential sakana, but it was relatively safe. Therefore, umikom akom bechol mashi yecholin leshanos mishanin. So, whatever you can use a shinoi for, you should use a shinoi. Now, don't misconstrue this. Sometimes people get all confused and they think that in general, you're allowed to do malacha with a shinoi. You know, I can turn on the light with my elbow and I can, you know, turn on the dishwasher with my nose. You know, that doesn't work, right? You're not allowed to do malacha on Shabbos with a shinoi. In this case, where you have a chola sheyesh basakana, but she's a yoledes, so therefore we say you can do malacha for her, but whatever she needs, but you do it with a shinoi. Kegon im tzvichim lahavila kli meviola chaverta taloi besara. Right, if you have to carry, let's say there's no eruv, and you have to bring her something, she needs something from a different place. So, you know, her friend has to bring it for her, but there's no eruv. So her friend should, you know, tie it into her hair, something like that. It's a funny way of carrying it. So she's not carrying it just in her arms, you know, she's carrying it in her hair. So that's a funny way of doing it. That's a shinoi, and that's a v'chein kol kayotze bozeh. And practically speaking, this is what we do, right? You know, you dial with your knuckles and things like that. You know, you try to do shinuyim. Again, if it's impossible, you know, you do what you have to do. You have to get her to the hospital, you know. But you try to do it with shinuyim, and that's why you try to call a taxi, you know, preferably a non-Jewish driver if possible, and things like that. Obviously, if push comes to shove and you don't have time, right? I have a friend who, they almost didn't make it to the hospital on Shabbos. And he had to, you know, Shabbos afternoon, he had to jump into his car and, you know, race off to the hospital. And, you know, and his wife was rushed in, and he, you know, was kind of like, you know, and all these things, it's a little complicated because you can't turn off your car, right? Because once you get to the hospital, there's no heter to turn off your car, right? The whole heter was to get your wife to the hospital, and now she's here, right? So you can't even park, right? You got to just leave your car, you drive to the hospital, you leave your car there in the middle, and you run in with your wife, and you tell them, you know, take care of it. I mean, you know, nowadays they'll valet it for you, whatever, they'll take care of it. But especially if it's a hospital where, you know, many from people come, it's not something, you know, they're going to be used to this kind of thing. But in general, you can do malacha, but you try to do it with a shinoi if possible. Yeah?
Why is it different than Hatzolah is allowed to turn off their car and they're allowed to go home?
Okay,
so why
right.
Is it different?
Okay, so Hatzolah is a whole different story, and that's for another time. But again, this is what Shlomo was alluding to before, and I believe it's even more expansive than just a Yoledes. I think that in Eretz Yisrael in general, you know, there are different Piskei Halacha. For example, you know, Hatzolah members are allowed to come home. Now, you know, in America, we possibly are allowed to come home based on Rav Moshe. In Eretz Yisrael, you know, they don't. I think they have to come home with a guy. I think they have to, you know,
they come home. They can't come.
No, but they don't have to come home with a guy.
Gotta find a guy. Another community here also.
Yeah.
In Satma and
right.
They have a guy.
They have a guy driving them. Right. Okay. Right. They have a guy driving.
They have a guy driving the ambulances in the members' home on Shabbos.
Aha. Uh-huh. Right. Okay.
That was a Satma
right.
Psak with
right.
Where Rav Yo would not let that Psak come out as long as their Moshe was alive.
Uh-huh.
And once Moshe right. Was nipped, but in Eretz Yisrael also depends. The Hasidic communities
Are more machmir.
They're from the Bedats.
Right.
They're machmir.
Right.
The regular
right.
Hatzalah guys will go home.
Right, so the reason why Hatzalah guys are allowed to come home, in short, and again, it's a much more complicated issue. Number one, nobody would volunteer, because who wants to get stuck in the hospital the whole time? You get a call Friday night, you're there the whole Shabbos. Plus, you know, they might be needed again also.
Right.
You know, you might need Hatzalah, you know, you need them back in the community so that they can, you know, they can go on another call. In the case of the husband, you know, there's no heter for him to turn off his car. What, you know, what's going to happen? He's going to run out of gas? Okay, so no, you know, it's a, you know, $40, $50, you know, you'll deal with it. Not a big deal. There's no heter for the husband in that kind of a case. So, you know, but again, you don't have to make yourself crazy. You know, you don't have to, you drive like normal. Again, you try, you know, we try to call a taxi if possible. If the taxi's not coming and the woman's in labor and you got to get to the hospital, you jump in the car and you drive to the hospital and that's it. Right? You know, so you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos. You try to do it with a shinoi. But you are allowed to be Mechal Shabbos for a Yoledes. It's interesting. When you talk about Eretz Yisrael in America. So in Eretz Yisrael, the general minhag is that men, I think, in many hospitals, don't go into the delivery room, right? Men are not they're not allowed into the delivery room. They don't go in. In America, obviously, men are allowed into the delivery room. What's the issue here? So this is also discussed by the poskim, and here you have also an iser v'heter issue. The main issue here at play. Is that a woman, when she's in labor, serious labor, not just like the beginning stages of labor, but when she's in real, in, you know, in, like, you know, really in labor, so that a woman becomes a nida. She becomes a nida. When a woman is a nida, so obviously there are the isurim that apply between husband and wife, and one of the isurim is that a husband is not allowed to be looking at the areas of his wife's body that are generally covered. That's one of the prohibitions of nida. Right, no problem with the arm, with the hands, but other areas of the body which are generally covered, husband is not allowed to look at. when a woman's in labor and she's lying in the hospital bed in a hospital gown, obviously there are going to be parts of her body that are exposed that the husband is not allowed to be looking at right now because right now she's in Nida. That's issue number one. Issue number two is that a husband is not allowed to look at the makom erva where the baby's coming out. Right? That's a prohibition. A man is not allowed to look at that area, even if it's his wife. So here you have two problems in the delivery room that the husband is not allowed to be seeing, looking, etc. And yet, you know, you have a mirror in some places there's a mirror so everybody can see, you know, get a good view and things like that. So there were some poskim,
video,
everything, you know, you get it on the, you know, a live feed. But there are some poskim who take a very hard line approach here. So you look, for example, we'll come back to Rav Moshe, but you look, for example, at source number 10, the Tshuvas Van Hugga says Rav Moshe Sternbach, who's from the Eda Haredis in Yerushalayim, and he's also in South Africa. So he writes very, very, in very strong terms that a husband is, it's absolutely usser for the husband to be in the room with his wife while she's delivering. And he says that even if a woman claims that she needs her husband there for to make her feel moral support, he writes she can get moral support and good coaching from someone else, you know, who could be more effective than her husband, and tell the woman, you know, not to relax and not to worry, and we'll get someone else who can help her, and he writes at the very end. He writes, I'm sorry, if you look where it's underlined, he writes, Yesh lahasbir la esadin she'asr. So you got to tell the woman that it's usr. He can't be there. It's usr for him to be there. Right, we have to create a fence. He's not allowed to see his wife in this type of situation. He can't watch the delivery anyway. And he can't be there. He writes at the end that if the woman is screaming, you know, she's mamish screaming and going on, carrying on, that she needs her husband, and the doctors are nervous that if you don't let the guy in, it's going to be pikuach nefesh, you know, for this poor woman. So he says, then, you know, okay, what are you going to do? You know, if you see that she's really, it's really a matter of pikuach nefesh, obviously you let the guy in. But otherwise, assuming that all things being equal, you try to convince her that he shouldn't be there. Rav Moshe, on the other hand, was not so strict about this. If you look at source number 9, he was asked this question, if a man can be there, and he writes where it's underlined. He writes that certainly if there's a tzorech, if the woman wants him, you know, she wants him there, certainly he can be there. V'af belo tzorech en yiroa iser. He says, I don't see any iser for him to be there, even if there's no need. Even if he's not really needed. He says, of course, he can't watch, he can't look. You know, you have to be careful. So you have to be careful where you're looking, be careful what you're watching. You know, just, you be careful. You know, I remember before the birth of my first son, you know, so the Rav told me, he said, sure, you can go into the delivery room like Rav Moshe. He says, but you put yourself, you know, by the head of the bed. Right. You know, you face your wife's head, you look that way.
She's
and
great.
She's driving, yeah, yeah.
She's
okay, yeah, yeah.
Great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, things, you know, things shift, things move, you know. But yeah, you're right. So again, that was Rav Moshe's approach, that if you position yourself correctly, you know, you don't have to look at anything, and you can be there. You can be there for moral support. You can be there to support her. And Rav Moshe didn't see a problem with that per se. Okay. Now, once a woman delivers, once she gives birth, so then the question is: are there any brachos? Right? What about gomel? What about the bracha of hagomel? So if you look at the Shulchan Aruch, it doesn't mention that a woman should make the bracha of hagomel when she has a child. It is brought in the Beis Yosef in the name of the Knesset Hagadola, but there was actually a very well established minhag for women who deliver not to bench gomel, and there was a big debate back and forth. You know, should she bench gomel? Should she not bench gomel? Rav Avadia, if you look at source number 11, is a proponent that women should bench gomel. He writes, "V'lachein ha'nachon sheyesh linho kedirei haknesses hagedola sheyisha tevarich be'ezras nashim kesheyesh asara anashim." Right, the woman should stand in the ezras nashim. We've done this here. Woman stands in the ezras nashim. You make sure there are 10 people. Again, you know, when it happens here, right? You know, it's she doesn't have to do it in the middle of shul. You know, but after shul, you get 10 people to go over to the mechitza. The woman makes the birchas hagomel. And they say, Amen, and Mishigamalech Kol Tov, and that's it. And the Rav Avadia writes, that's what you should do. Others try to explain the minhag of why women did not do it. Some of them focused on the language, you know, Shechayavim, which is in Lashon Zachar, so it doesn't really apply to women. The Har Tzvi, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, in source number 12, alludes to the Svara, which I found to be the most compelling. That if you listen to the language of the bracha, Hagomel Chayavim Tovos Shegmolani Kol Tov. What's Chayavim? Chayavim essentially were saying that we really had something coming to us, and we escaped. Right? Obviously, if it was a near miss, you know, something happened, the person's in an accident, Rachmana Litzlan, a person got sick, you know, you were in a dangerous situation. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu was sending you a message that you're a chayav, right? Meaning you have something coming to you, and you're lucky you got off this time. You know, you better shape up. And so, right, so Pesach Frank, that's fine if it's something that's, you know, unnatural. You get into an accident, something happens. But here, childbirth, which is a normal, natural occurrence in a woman's life, and in, you know, bringing life into this world, that's not chayavim. She didn't do anything wrong. You know, no one's going to claim that the woman was chayav, and that's why she experienced childbirth is a normal, natural way that you bring children into this world. That's it. Right? So therefore, he said that the whole concept of the bracha doesn't apply to a woman who's delivering. And that's why, you know, there is an established minhag not to bench gomel after a woman gives birth. Again, you know, you have poskim on both sides of the fence. You'll find some people will bench gomel, some people do not bench gomel. You know, either way you go, you have people to rely on, but there certainly is what to be said. The Shulchan Aruch writes, in source number 13, that there is a bracha that should be made. And this is something that's not, you know, so well known. More people know about the bracha of Hagomel, even though it's machlokas if you should make it. But more people know about that. But the Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch says very clearly, Yalda Ishto Zachar, that if a person, if a woman has a boy, a male child, Mivarech Hatov Ametiv, you make a bracha of Hatov Ametiv. Right? It's something that's good. Hatov Ametiv is generally made when it's good for both parents. So it's good for me, it's good for her, so you make the bracha of Atov V'Ametiv. V'gam Hitzricha L'Varach, and they both have to make it. The husband has to make the bracha, and the wife has to make the bracha. The reason why it's specifically a male child and not a female child, so I believe that it was because of Parnassa. You know, obviously in those days, certainly, when a male child came into the family, that was like, okay, you know, we're going to have Parnassa. He's going to work with the father, and they're going to make a Parnassa. Today it's not the same thing, I understand. Today it's not the same thing. But in those days, that's certainly the way it was. Rav Hirsch explains that that's, you know, the concept in the Torah. If you look at Pishnayim, why the Bechor gets Pishnayim, that was like the Bechor was the right-hand man of the father. He was the one who was going to go into the family, you know, who was going to work on the family farm and keep things going. So that's why there's a bracha of Hatov Ametiv when a woman has a boy. It's interesting that Rama talks about Rachmana Litzlan, if the woman dies in childbirth or the husband died, you know, before the child is born, you don't make Hatov Ametiv. Because there's only one person around to appreciate this child, you just make a shechianu. Hatov ametiv is only when there's multiple parties that are benefiting from this good news. Here, if there's only one parent, Rachmana Litzlan, you just make a shechianu. It's interesting. The Mishnah Berurah writes that what about for a girl? So the Mishnah Berurah writes that for a girl you make shechianu, right? He says, okay, you don't make hatov ametiv, but you make a shechianu. And it's interesting, he writes, you know, this is certainly fitting for someone like me, but he writes in source number 14, Midasas ma poskim mashma, from the fact that the poskim were unclear about this, it seems, Deafilu hayulo kama zicharim, v'toyev sheyivalid lo bas, right, even if you have a bunch of boys, and you want a girl, right, so now you have another boy, so you still make atov ametiv? So he says, yeah, you still make atov ametiv, right, even though you want a girl, you still make atov ametiv. Kedeshikai mitzvah pruravu, right? You want to be mekayim the mitzvah. Afilu hachi says im nolad bas ein mevarich al zeh. You don't make a tov ve'ametiv. Mikomokom nearly pashu de bepam rishon kisheroa osa. As soon as you see the girl, mevarich bircha shechianu. You make a shechianu. Right? You make a shechianu. The Mishnah Berurah holds you make a shechianu upon the birth of a girl. He says, you know, it's no worse. You know, you see the Gemara talks about you see your friend after 30 days, you make a shechianu, because you're happy to see him. So certainly, you're happy to see this little beautiful baby girl. So you make a shechianu. There are again different minhagim about this as well. Some people do make a shechianu, some people don't make a shechianu. Shechianu is one of those brachos that also nowadays, even for things like suits and things like that, you know, not everybody makes this bracha in general. So it's a bracha that kind of, you know, I mean, it's still made here and there. But it's not something that's made as often as the Gemara implies that it should be made, and that's why some people even if you have a girl, some people don't make the bracha of shechianu at all. Much like it's not made in other areas. I'll just finish conclude with one last minhag. It's interesting that there's another minhag that's I heard about this minhag and I never understood the reasoning behind it. But there's another minhag that a woman, after she gives birth and she gets back on her feet, she should go to shul to hear baruch hu, not just to hear baruch hu, to hear a davar shebekdusha, to kedusha baruch hu, whatever the case is, different minhagim. So what's the source for this minhag? It's very interesting. So it's based on the Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara in Brachos enumerates several people that require shimur. Yeah, you need a shomer for them. So we know a chassan. Right? A chassan is getting married. A chassan and a kala, they're getting married. So we know you have a shomer that day to walk around with a chassan. And it's for mazikim, you know, kind of metaphysical, you know, injuries that might happen to him on the day of his chasana. So one of the people that's mentioned, and actually in the same category as a chasan, is a chaya, is a woman who's a yoledes, who just gave birth. That she also needs a shomer. Now our practice is not to have a shomer for a woman who gave birth. Some say that the baby can act as her shomer, the baby's with her, you know, the whole time. But what some recommend, the Betzel HaChachma, in source number 16, recommends, he says that if the first time the woman goes out, she goes out for a dvar mitzvah, that chases away all the mazikim. Then you have nothing to worry about. If the first time she goes out, she's going out for a mitzvah, she's going out to hear baruch hu, she's going out to hear kedusha, whatever that, you know, she's going out to hear some davar shebitusha, that chases away the mazikim, and then she has nothing more to worry about. And that's why some have the minhag that before she gets, you know, gets back into her routine, shopping, going back to work, whatever she's doing, you know, she goes first to shul. Some people, they make a minyan in the house, you know, for her. But otherwise, she can come to shul and hear baruch hu, hear kedusha, and that way she can avoid the issue of mazikim. Mirza Hashem, next week we'll pick up with some of the halachas and minhagim of baby naming.
See, they have a chida Aravim.